Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
What we have talked about today being Maundy Thursday, and Peter Kapsner is in the studio to talk with us not only about Maundy Thursday, but what he and I are going to start calling 50 Shades of Truth. We just really feel like in the culture today, discerning the truth from the lies of the world and all of the efforts in the world to suppress the truth is just something that we want to continue to return to in conversation with one another. And so Peter Kapsner is going to join us each week. We're actually, I think today is the last week where he's going to join us on a Thursday. And next week, he's going to start joining us on Tuesday mornings. So if you are a person who wants to be sure you don't miss the segment with Peter, then be sure you're tuned in on Tuesdays starting next week. Peter and I are going to let's just lead off right now, Peter, in a conversation about Maundy Thursday. First of all, welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. And then just give us your thoughts on Maundy Thursday.
Yeah, it's great to be with you, as always, here, Carmen. And as you and I were chatting even yesterday a little bit about this Maundy Thursday, it's, I don't know about our listeners, but it's not something that I necessarily grew up with. I did grow up in the Catholic Church, and I went to Catholic elementary school, but it wasn't anything that we particularly practiced. In fact, Good Friday wasn't even something that growing up in the 70s and 80s really was maybe as pervasively celebrated in the Protestant Church as it is today. And Maundy Thursday now falls into that category. It was probably 15 years ago as a family we started celebrating this, and it really is, it's an act and an action that mirrors, as we gather on Maundy Thursday, what Jesus did with his disciples when he washed their feet in that last part of Holy Week as a demonstration of service that, oh, although he was a king of a kingdom, he was giving us a real physical demonstration that to wash somebody's feet was almost one of the ultimate acts of service back then, because they walked around in sandals or bare feet in a very dusty society of Israel. If you've been to Israel, you know it's a lot of dust and a lot of rock, and you get dirty really quickly. And usually it was the role of the servant to then, when somebody would enter into a home, to come with a little bowl of water and wash their feet to make them clean then for sort of fit use in the house. We you know, wipe our feet on mats nowadays when we walk in, but that's what they did. And that really was beneath the dignity of the religious leaders of the day. And Jesus, as he often did, was turning things upside down by coming to the people that we would have thought were serving him as the king, and he chose to serve them instead and gave us a great model on Maundy Thursday.
So, Peter, when we come back, let's make this transition to these conversations about 50 Shades of Truth. Just efforts in the culture to suppress the truth and opportunities for Christians to recognize what truth is and then how to be advocates of truth in the culture. Peter Kapsner and I, Carmen LaBurge, will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. My conversation partner is Peter Kapsner. Welcome back, man.
Hey, it's great to be here, Carmen. I love the name that you've given this segment, too, in terms of 50 Shades of Truth. I have to say, again, if you're listening and you don't know the reference point, there's a lot of my students these days, and especially it comes up in my sexuality class, Carmen, that have watched the series of movies, 50 Shades of Grey, which are based on a book series that really have some disturbing sexual themes within them. And so, but when the students are watching these movies and reading these books, it's amazing. You and I talk about this kind of thing all the time, about how the shocking becomes sort of normal. And if we don't actually turn back towards and wonder what's true about these things, it's really easy that we just sort of assume all things are true that maybe aren't.
Well, that's exactly right. And so let's just, I even see this happening in the church. And so I just want to lead off with a story that, frankly, I found a little astonishing. It's actually in the Washington Post, which is an unusual place to see, you know, like a this happened in a youth group in Ohio kind of conversation. Like, that's not normally what you read in the Washington Post. But this was such an unusual event that took place in this Ohio youth group that that the Washington Post is now covering it. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, amazing story where the, you know, a pretty typical youth group evening turned into something very different. And in fact, the church has suggested that it really wants to brand itself by being increasingly relevant, quote unquote, in the culture. And so what they did is they had the associate pastor recently sort of stand up in front of a group of people, the group of students, actually, that ranged between maybe 11 and 15 years old, and invited them to come up and stand in line. And he was going to play the role of Jesus about what Jesus would have experienced in the suffering of Holy Week, and especially as he was headed towards the cross. And he invited the young people to one by one come up to begin with to literally spit in his face. And the video is pretty disturbing in the sense that there's a lot of young people that are disturbed by this. They say, no, don't do it. Don't do it. But there are several young people that even seem to take a bit of joy in coming up and spitting into the associate pastor's face. And I guess, you know, on one level, Carmen, that seems like it might have crossed the line. And in fact, it did. But if it would have stopped there, I don't know where we would have ended up. Because then the next invitation coming from the pastoral team was to have the kids line up and then openly slap the associate pastor. And boy, they wailed away. And it was just, again, you had sort of this disturbing, please stop, don't do it kind of thing going on in youth group. And then went one step further where the associate pastor sort of bared his shoulders or his back a bit by slipping his shirt down and brought out a steak knife and put it in the hands of a 12-year-old and invited that young boy to go ahead and cut him as Jesus would have been cut in that time of the crucifixion. And at that point, things stopped and parents got word of what was happening. And literally the 12-year-old boy's parents pulled up and took him out. And it's pretty ugly aftermath in terms of what was happening there.
OK, so let's talk about wisdom and let's talk about the need for wisdom, even as we are seeking as Christians to be sure that people understand what happened on Maundy Thursday, what happened on Good Friday. Let's talk about wisdom.
Yeah, it's, you know, wisdom defined in the biblical text is it's independent of age. It is the ability to see as God sees, to be able to discern those things that are good and those things that are evil, those things that will be consistent with the kingdom versus those things that aren't. And so what does it mean to have wisdom, even when it comes to parenting our young kids? That I think we know there's increasingly sort of this with the violent culture in which we live, to incite or to invite actual physical violence as opposed to some of the virtual violence that we're experiencing or reading about all the time, maybe is less than wise. You know, Carmen, I remember going to basketball camp when I was probably 10 or 11 years old, and there was a time during the basketball camp in which one of the coaches stood up during the chapels that we would have each day, and he did go ahead and talk about the suffering that Jesus experienced. He talked about the length of the thorns that were on Jesus's crown of thorns. He talked about the three-pronged whip, that the damage that would have done to Jesus's back, and he talked about the suffering, and it really brought us into it in a way that desanitized the situation. And it was appropriate. There was a wisdom. We sort of stood there in sobered silence and really began to understand a bit more about what Jesus went through in order to beat death itself. That there was a wisdom there in that, in the invitation, and it made an impact on me for a lifetime. This doesn't seem to be wise. This seems more of an idea of we just are trying to be this word relevant somehow, and we cross lines all the time.
So let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, I just love to talk about what's going on in schools across the country right now. We just talked a minute ago with Ben Johnson about what's going on at North Pole High School in terms of the confusion and then the conflict that is now arising in places across the country because students who identify as transgender are now making their way into the biological bathroom of others. And doing things like taking selfies there. And it's inappropriate. It's provocative. They're kids. It's not wise. But now we actually then have like physical conflict between girls and boys. But we also have this rise across the country in mandated curriculum that requires students to learn and then speak language that I would say is contrary to reality. So we're going to continue to talk about the suppression of the truth here with Peter Kapsner. He and I will be right back. Peter Kapsner, you got your finger on the pulse of what's going on with young people and certainly what's going on in terms of their education and their development. You talk a lot about the intersection of identity, particularly in relationship to what's going on in the culture among those who identify across a spectrum of sexual identities. And so tell us what's going on. Tell us what's going on in our schools today.
Yeah, you know, I'm really fortunate, Carmen, in the sense that about 40 minutes from now, I'm going to be standing with 30 more young people that range in age from 18 to 22 years old. And I get to do that a couple times a week at an hour and a half a crack. And it really is. I mean, privilege is such a cliched word, but I do feel that way when I'm with the young people, because you get a sense of what they're struggling with and what they're wrestling with. And they're sort of a little window into the life of the next generations. And among that, we're going to actually start our conversations today on same gender identity and get into some of the language that is being used in many of the schools and political spheres that really is promoting increasingly so some specific curriculum that redefines the way that we understand ourselves as people of gender and sexuality, and ran across a PowerPoint that was being distributed in the local schools that was, I think it was 5th through 8th grade students were going to be exposed to in some local classrooms. And it came from a church that I'll be in a couple of weeks, just talking about some of these things. And I was really, it was interesting to me, Carmen, how subtly it was framed. There was sort of this invitation to say, if parents are not comfortable with this sort of curriculum, with this sort of understanding of gender and sexuality, they can petition to the school. They can sort of take their kids out of the room as it's being distributed. But we know what that does to young kids, to suddenly feel excluded from the room. I mean, I know when I was growing up in that Catholic church that I referenced, and my parents became Protestant when I was a young boy, I went from being able to take Mass with everybody to then now I was sitting out Mass because I was Protestant instead of Catholic. And that I didn't understand all of what was going on. I knew I wasn't with my friends anymore. And that's part of what we would see happen, because in these classrooms, what they're distributing out now is what it means to be a safe person in order for people of different genders and different identities. How can you be a safe place for them to have these conversations? And implicit in it, Carmen, is that if you're not willing to embrace and be open and affirm, then you are sort of in the camp of being bigoted or possibly being ignorant or possibly being exclusionary, somebody who would be judging. And we're left with kind of this binary choice. And I think a lot of families feel this. They say, you know, I don't want to embrace this ideology that's being promoted in the classroom now. But if I don't, then I get excluded and I get left out, or I get set aside, or it's just sort of subtly being told that I really am not enlightened and I don't understand. And I think that's one of those places that is such an important invitation for our families today is there a third way? Is there a middle road? Can we actually be people that are not perceived as being bigoted and exclusionary, but really hold to some of the truths of God's kingdom without being so angry about it? And that's really where our young people are today. They don't want to embrace everything, but they don't really feel like they have any other option.
So I'll admit to you that, you know, it's I'm a week late in even knowing that April the 12th was Be an Ally Friday.
Right, right.
I didn't even know that last Friday in public schools across the country was Be an Ally Friday.
Right.
And you know, so I've got a middle school kid. So like I'm now wondering to myself, was it Be an Ally Friday at his school on Friday? And I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I mean, there's stuff that's going on all day long in the schools that I think, and it's not bad school. There's so many really great things that can happen in school. But I think to be aware, I'm in this field, Carmen, day in and day out. And I was not aware of what some of the PowerPoints were that were going through that the school felt like was mandated to teach. And as I'm with other people that are in schools, I know a middle school counselor, and she said that 5 years ago, she had nobody in her office in terms of young people that were coming in and asking questions about their own identity. Now she said that her office is full all day long, that, and that's not an exaggeration, kids coming because they're being taught at very early ages and being mandated to teach at very early ages that there are all kinds of different forms of sexual and gender identity, and they really should begin to choose one at these early ages, and they're terribly confused. But like you said, Carmen, I have such sympathy for families. Life is busy. We're running to our sports. We're running to our events. Kids are in school 8, 9, 10 hours a day. We're working two jobs, all of these things. What time do we really have? And things happen and we hardly even know about it.
So apparently it's also known as the day of silence. Now I'm Googling, right? So, all right. Peter Capser and I are talking about identity. We are talking about the suppression of the truth in the culture today. We're talking about equipping ourselves as Christian parents in order that we can have conversations with one another and with our kids about how they present themselves and how they respond to this very real effort in the culture today to have them accept things as true that are clearly not true. So I'm wondering, Peter, if you've heard about the response of these girls in Council Bluff, Iowa, who are refusing at Abraham Lincoln High School. They are refusing to give up the privacy of their bathroom to a boy who recently began identifying as a girl. And so these girls, they're openly protesting. They are standing up to accusations of bigotry, and they are saying it is deceitful and it is an invasion of our privacy that our school would allow a biological boy who just recently began identifying as a girl to use our bathroom. And so at 10:30, I guess on last Friday morning, they started chanting for privacy in restrooms and they walked out. What do you think's going on there? I mean, I'm supportive of them. I think they should have privacy in the bathroom. I don't think biological boys of any age should be in girls' bathrooms. I mean, I know biological boys. They are thinking things.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is, Carmen, the situation you just described is probably the most common question that I get. And when I go spend some time with youth groups and youth pastors trying to navigate these questions, and it really comes down to that they'll ask that question. So what do we do if a boy in our youth group begins to identify as a girl or a girl as a boy and we're on a retreat, and what bathroom are they supposed to go into? These are real questions happening in real churches right now. And I think the young women's response is rightly ordered. We have some rights here too. We don't necessarily want this person in the bathroom with us. But, I think, Carmen, one of the invitations we have as a church right now is that if it just ends there, if it ends in protest, if it ends in we are just going to just say we don't want this sort of thing, we might be missing the mark a bit. And what I mean by that is I learned the hard way in my class over the past 8 or 9 years that I had to start with what is a healthy and holy biblical vision of sexuality that is invitational and beautiful and good and expansive and thought-provoking, all of these sorts of things, because young people, by contrast, are not getting always a lot of teaching in the church about sexuality and about the beauty and the wonder of it when it's meant for a covenant relationship between a male and a female. And I have to spend about 3 weeks, and it's been a good journey for me. I mean, that's the best part about being a college professor is I'm forced to teach and learn myself so many things. And so we spend those 3 weeks really creating a vision of a beautiful sexuality, and in doing so, there gets to be an invitation from the young people to say, oh, now I understand maybe why pornography is not a direction I want to go, or maybe now this gender blurring doesn't make as much sense, or maybe now divorce and remarriage, some of these questions about how to walk through those things all make more sense. And so I think there is an invitation here, Carmen, to yes, resist some of the agenda that's going on, but if we only just do the resistance piece and we can't recreate a vision of health and wholeness, then I think we're going to fall short in trying to figure this thing out.
Okay. Sadly, we do not have time to talk about a community of people who are seeking to become mermaids. But
that is sad, Carmen.
but because you frequently visit me here on Mornings with Carmen, I am absolutely holding out the mermaid conversation until Tuesday.
Don't let that go into the archives, Carmen. Yes, we will cover that.
That was a long tease. But there you go. Hey, Peter Capser, thank you so much for joining us today. I got to take a minute for Breakpoint, and then we'll be back. Okay, maybe one of my most favorite so far Easter egg hunt articles has been about parents at UC Berkeley who had to stand in line for over an hour to sign a waiver acknowledging that that they recognized that there were risks involved in allowing their children to run around on this manicured green grass and pick up eggs that were not even hidden. They had to first sign these waivers, including the risk of injury or even death. The hunt itself, once it started, lasted less than a minute. But they had already invested more than an hour standing in line in order that kids could participate. That might be one of my most favorite Easter headlines so far about Easter egg hunts. Easter egg hunting, Easter egg baskets, Easter candy, Easter bunnies, all of the cultural trappings of Easter. How do we communicate with our kids the real meaning of Easter? How do we as Christian parents ensure that our kids actually know what Easter is all about? That conversation is up next. I'm going to be talking with Danny Huerta of Focus on the Family.
Today's teens are more vulnerable than ever. They're getting bombarded by sexually charged images and innuendo. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Overt sexual expression is everywhere, on TV and lyrics. We can't shield our kids from everything. So how do we help them navigate their natural curiosities? Well, try holding a candid conversation. Say stuff that lets them know you're not afraid to converse about sex. Ask questions and wait for his answer. Let him know that it's a trap that you have to avoid as well. Remember, letting your son come to the right conclusion on his own is far more effective than launching into a lecture. We can't always be there to protect our teens, but we can prepare them to make wise decisions when temptation comes.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
Just joining us, this is Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. I am excited to be talking with Danny Huerta. He's joining us via Skype from Focus on the Family. Danny, welcome.
Hey, Carmen. Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
So we already have people texting us on our text line after the tease that I just gave about bunnies and Easter baskets and candy and how do we help our children understand the real meaning of Easter. I'm already hearing from people. Here is a listener right here asking about 5 and 6 year olds. I just need to know straight up, how do I talk about Easter with my 5 and 6 year old? There you go.
Yeah,
that's my lead off, man.
What's that?
That's my leadoff.
Yeah, that's your leadoff. That's great. You know, it's very challenging because of the consumer mindset we've created with Easter. But with that, I love having the treasure hunts with the kids. And one thing that I've done with my own kids and recommended families do is with the hunt for the eggs, what you can do is put a verse inside of that with the egg and begin to help them understand who God has said they are. And then begin with the story. You know, this is about a love story. It's similar to Valentine's Day in the sense that it's centered on love and it gives a feeling for the economy of love. What would a mom and dad do for their child? And a 5 to 6 year old can capture that. What would I do if I knew you were going to be hurt? As a mom, as a dad, what would I do? And they say, well, you'd come and probably save me. Okay, well, Jesus did that for us as well. And that's where you can begin to show that Jesus, our Heavenly Father, our Savior, decided to send His Son to save us. And that that the economy of that or the payment for that was death. That's how deep love goes. It's not all about happy and smile. It's about somebody sacrificing for someone else, just like a mom and dad would do for their children. And so what you can do is put little verses in the eggs. They go for a hunt, and it is the sweet truths of God that we get to learn in that, in what He says about us as His children, And then what you can do is put that all on a sheet of paper. Once they have found it and been the great treasure hunters, they enjoy the sweet treats while you're putting up those truths. And you can go all the way back to Adam and Eve and talk about that story, the beginning, where God wanted us to be together all the time. And what happened was sin turned us into consumers, where what we wanted was everything for ourselves. But God wanted us to be contributors as part of his story and the creation that he had created, and for us to be co-creators. And that's where you can go and decorate eggs and talk about that. What does it mean that we're co-creators? What skills and talents has he given his children? And why did he give us such a wide variety of skills and talents, and such beautiful skills and talents? And you can see that we can create incredible things, and God has given us that opportunity to do so. And he wants to be with us for eternity. And so he wants to bring us back. When he said, when he died on the cross and resurrected, what's beautiful about that is he gave us our new self. And you guys can read that in Colossians 3, midway through, of what that means. It turns us from a consumer at the beginning of Colossians 3 to a contributor, to a connector, to a person who loves others. And we begin to enter that love story that really we get to learn about at Easter time. So that gives you some ideas of some creative ways to begin to tie in all the different stories that give us a feel for how deep God's love is for us.
So let me encourage you, if you're listening right now, you can go to focusonthefamily.com, and under the parenting tab, there is there's actually a compilation of pieces and articles. The heading is Holy Week and Easter Activities for the Whole Family. But in there, you see some of these great ideas that Tony is sharing right now. Everything from preschool activities to activities for school age and tweens and even teens. And we've got here this Finding Easter in Bunnies and Baskets that some of the ideas that Tony is sharing now are included in. So I'll be sure and tweet that out and push that out on my social media as well. But you can just go to focusonthefamily.com under the parenting tab. And what you're looking for are those Easter resources for your family. Tony, I really appreciate the language that you're introducing here. I love the idea that it's not an egg hunt, it's a treasure hunt. We have in our family always had the most important egg that anybody could find would be the one that's empty. That's mm-hmm. always been, and then we really focus on the empty tomb using that empty egg. Like, that's the egg you want to find. Mm-hmm. And then I've got a friend who, one of the things that they do in their family is they actually have a hope chest. It doesn't matter if you're a boy or a girl, you have a hope chest, and they have all these wonderful things that they do over the course of the year and as their children grow that are related to their hope chest. And because they are becoming, they are becoming something other than children, right? And there is this hope set before them that they're going to be mature adults and what that looks like to grow in faith. And they got all kinds of great ideas related to it. But one of the things that they do at Easter that's related to the hope chest, they put one real pearl in an egg.
Oh,
and
wow.
And so over the course of time, their kids are collecting over the course of time these pearls of great price, and those go in their hope chest. And I realize that it's a simple thing, and it's, a pearl is a great treasure. It gives you the opportunity to talk about the pearl of great price. It takes you back to scripture, but it also connects Easter to some other things as opposed to, Easter is just this one day thing we do. Easter is actually, the culmination event of who we are, as Christ people, as Easter people.
Yes.
What are some, how about resurrection eggs? Do you guys do resurrection eggs? Are you familiar with that kind of practice and process?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The resurrection eggs are fantastic. I mean, they give you the whole entire story, and you can fill in the gaps of some things Jesus did between Palm Sunday, the triumphal entry, and the various lessons he gives, especially in Matthew. You can go in and talk about the different concepts, teachings that Jesus gave, and also the washing of the feet, that God came as a servant, and we get to be servants as well of one another. That's part of that love, that he came to serve us in that we we get to connect with him. That's the core of his ministry is the core message of reconciliation. And what does that mean? What does it mean to bridge with one another? And how have we forgiven each other this past year? And you can enter into conversations using those resurrection eggs with little figurines and things inside those eggs that begin the conversation and the story, the piece of the story, and it leads you all the way through to the resurrection. And I think those are great, and you can hunt for those as well. And some families will say, man, you know, I just don't want to get all the chocolates. This is the most chocolated holiday, right? The most chocolated day of the year, and it's the most celebrated across the world. And you don't have to have that be a distraction. You can use it. You can use the chocolates as part of the enjoyment as you're listening to the story of resurrection eggs and talking about, again, these are sweet truths that we get to hear about what God has said, of what he's wanted us to know, the depth of his love and how he wants to be with us for eternity. And there are actually a couple really good books that I would recommend families as they're exploring this throughout the year. And Lee Strobel wrote The Case for Christ for Kids, and J. Warner Wallace and Susie Wallace wrote Cold Case Christianity for Kids. And these are detective ways to handle the story, going in and looking at the facts. What is true? What can we understand about history and what's true about all this? Did Jesus truly die on the cross? How did they handle crosses back then? And for some of those intellectual kids that are 5, 6, 7, 8, they may enjoy hearing that over and over again, become detectives of what the truths are about Easter. And that can be a great conversation for those kids that want a more academic approach to Easter and understanding the story.
All right, Danny, we got all kinds of ideas rolling in from listeners. And so during the break, if you want to text me your ideas in terms of how you are communicating the real meaning of Christmas, the real meaning of Easter to your kids, please do so. The number where you can text is 877-933-2484, continuing our conversation with Danny Huerta from Focus on the Family about really, you know, how to be sure that our kids get the real meaning of Easter. So continuing our conversation about how to be sure that Easter is something that our kids like genuinely understand, and then it does not just become about super sweet chocolate and massive quantities of it, or even pretty dresses that we wear to church, but that it really is about the resurrection of Christ, the empty tomb, what God has done to put a hinge in all of human history that turns us into Easter people. And so what does that look like for Easter to not just be a day, but to be really who we are? So we've got some listeners who are texting in. Here is a grandma who says, I hide stuffed lambs for my 20-month-old great-granddaughter. I love that. I love that there's this legacy of faith, right, that there's the lamb that we're going to go and we're gonna find. That brings certainly to mind the one lamb of the hundred who was missing, and Jesus went out to seek and to save that which was lost. And it gives us a great opportunity to talk about the lamb who was slain. You know, the behold the lamb part of the conversation. Actually, this seems to be a trend in my text messages right now. I decorate with lambs, not bunnies. It prompts questions and discussion with kids and adults as to why we use lambs and not bunnies. So there you go. What are some other ideas you've got, Danny?
Well, one of them that is an interesting one is doing a hard-boiled egg and decorating the outside and spending time doing that and making it look real nice. And then talking about if we were to crack that, what do we see inside? And it's a very pure a pure egg. And talking about how, especially for the teenage kids doing this, what are all the things that we do to decorate our identity? What do we spend our time decorating on our external, and what's really the truth about our internal? What has God said he wants from us? And that is to love him back within our true identity, that we don't need to gain love anywhere else. He's given us all the love we need. He loves us to the depths. And that is what we find out here in the Easter story, and discussing that in a in a deeper way with teenagers that are trying to grapple with a lot of different messages that are coming at them. Easter can feel juvenile to them and say, oh, you know, we used to do that. And yet this is an important time to have these conversations, these important conversations with teenagers that are really grappling with their identity. Who am I? And God has already said that, and the Easter story tells it all, that we are his children, that he is willing to die for us, and he loves us. And out of that love, we can love other people around us in deep ways as well, that we get free refills from Jesus when we go to him at any time.
I love that. I love free refills. I'm putting free refills on a slip of paper in this year's Easter eggs. So we've reached that stage where we've got multiple generations. And I'll tell you, we still have teenagers who like to hunt eggs. Like, it's still fun. And so I think that allowing them ways of engaging in that, if they're still willing, I think finding creative ways to include them in that is really important. We have migrated from Easter baskets in sort of the traditional sense to laundry baskets. Everybody in my family knows that on Easter morning, when you arrive at the age in which you should be doing your own laundry anyway, you're going to get a new laundry basket on Easter. And it also, right, the things that they need at this age and stage are bigger and different than they were when they were little. And so we just come up with all kinds of, we let the older kids open the resurrection eggs that the little kids have found as a part of the hunt. We let the older kids, you know, help the younger kids organize them, and then let the older kids tell the story, of each of those, treasures that's in each of those resurrection eggs. Because those resurrection eggs need to find their way back into, right, the set of 12 for the next year. So we don't really want those dispersed. The pearl of great price, I think, is one to encourage people to use as well. I love this language you've given us about being contributors instead of consumers. I'm definitely going to highlight that this year with my teenagers in terms of conversations on Easter. What does it look like for us to, following the mandate of Christ, to love as he loves and to serve as he, what does it look like in my life to turn on Easter from the accumulation of this ingathering to maybe to better see myself as a point of distribution?
Yeah, it's great. And I, you know, one other one that I want to throw in, Carmen, that I think was special that we did a couple of years ago, we'll do it again, involving the grandparents and the legacy of life verses that we have, that we rest upon these truths. First of all, the resurrection, that God loved us, rose from the dead, and has given us eternal life. But beyond that, what are the life verses from different family members in our family? We had grandparents give life verses, and we contributed as well, and different family members. And we put those as part of the hunt, and then talked about those verses. Why are those life verses for us? What's reassuring about those truths in our own lives? And this is, again, for teens. And then we put it on a sheet of paper at the end. We just put all those on a sheet of paper, decorated that paper, and then said, these are things we're going to fill our mind with throughout the year, remembering the beginning, the starting point, which was Easter when we began this list, and continuing with those truths and then talking about it the following Easter, about how did we see that present of God's presence in our lives?
Absolutely. The presence of God's, the present of God's presence. Danny Huerta from Focus on the Family, thank you so much for joining us today on Mornings with Carmen. Friends, you can go to Focus on the Family, to the parenting tab, to get all kinds of great ideas about how to help. Focus on the family.com/parenting for all of the resources that you need related to Easter and helping your kids better understand it. Hey, it is Maundy Thursday. Thank you so much for all that you are doing today to put Jesus in the forefront of the conversation. Walk your faith out today in ways that demonstrate who he really is.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at MyFaithRadio.com.